Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video. Find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
There was one particular time that a patient coded on the table in the OR, and we had to do CPR on that patient. And I have never been more focused in my whole life than in that chaos when a lot was going on, but it was like my brain was more clear than it had ever been. That should have really been a tip off.
Hello and welcome to the Women and ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Katie Weber. I was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 45, and it completely turned my world upside down. I've been looking back at so much of my life, school, jobs, my relationships, all of it with this new lens, and it has been nothing short of overwhelming. I quickly discovered I was not the only woman to have this experience, and now I interview other women who, like me, discovered in adulthood they have ADHD and are finally feeling like they understand who they are and how to best lean into their strengths, both professionally and personally. All right, here we are at episode 184, in which I interview Melody Hubert. Melody is a 45-year-old radiologic technologist from Central Florida. When her son was little, he was diagnosed with ADHD, but like many parents, it never occurred to Melody that she could also possibly have ADHD. Many years later, she had a chance conversation with one of her patients about Melody's hobby hopping, and that led her down her own rabbit hole to an eventual diagnosis. We talk about how Melody's ADHD has impacted her life, including things like focus, indecision, impulsivity, and what her father calls her lack of stick-to-itiveness. That said, we also talk about the positives of ADHD, including her ability to stay calm in a crisis and juggle multiple part-time jobs while caring for some of her family members. Melody also talks about how an adult ADHD diagnosis feels like you are swimming in the ocean with other people until you suddenly realize that they are all standing on a sandbar while you're the only one treading water. Now, you may have noticed before you hit play that this episode is a bit longer than usual, but honestly, we just couldn't help ourselves. The conversation just gets better and better as you go along, as far as I'm concerned, and by the end, we're pretty unhinged and a little giddy. And you will love Melody's sassy alternative name for ADHD, so stay tuned for that. On that note, I will waste no more time, and let's get to it. Hi, Melody. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for reaching out. I was really, really intrigued when I read some of your background. So I'm like, I have a million questions. I'm trying to figure out where to start. But I guess let's start with your diagnosis and kind of your own journey. You were, gosh, your son was diagnosed as a child and you said you had no clue. You mentioned it was a passing comment from one of your patients, right?
Yes. So I was working as an x-ray tech and a patient came in and we were x-raying her hands and she said something like, oh, I hope I don't need surgery on my hands because I quilt. And I said, oh, I used to quilt. And she's like, what kind of quilting did you do? And I said, honestly, I don't remember. I said, I probably only did like one quilt and then moved on to something else. I said, I've kind of had a lot of hobbies. And she said, you know, that's a symptom of ADHD, right? And I said, huh? No, I did not know that. Never even occurred to me. And so I started kind of digging in and researching online. And the more I kind of looked at how research says it presents in women, the more it resonated with me. And so when I came back to work, I said to my coworker, I was like, hey, listen, if a doctor were to, you know, diagnose me with ADHD, would that surprise you? And she goes, no, just like that. And I thought, oh God. Then later on in the day, because I was kind of fixated on this at that point, later in the day, I was walking through the doctor's dictation room and they were talking about someone with ADHD. And I said, hey, stop talking about me. And they just kind of laughed, you know? And then I said, no, seriously though, I kind of popped my head back in. I said, seriously though, I do think I have ADHD maybe. And the doctor looked at me and he said, you compensate well, but I see it. And I'm like, shit, I didn't know that anybody was really paying attention, you know, that anyone would notice that. But then at that time, I also worked at a different location down the street. And so when I went down there, I said to the two coworkers that I work with there, you know, hey, ask them the same question. If a doctor diagnosed me with ADHD, would you be surprised? And the one coworker laughed and said, no, not at all. And the other one said, I thought you'd already been diagnosed like years ago. You didn't know this already. I said, no, I had no idea. And again, I mean, I saw it in my son, because when he was little, I was homeschooling him. And it was very apparent to me that we had an issue as far as trying to keep him focused. And he was very rambunctious. And he had interesting traits too. When I look back on it, things that he did, like he would go on these, I guess, phases where he would be super fixated on something. So for a little while, it was Santa Claus. He was Santa Claus. He would dress as Santa Claus all day long, every day. Then he moved on to being super fixated on Phantom of the Opera. And I mean, all of these fixations lasted probably a good, you know, months, if not more than a year. Then it was Shamu. We had a big fixation on Shamu for a while. So things like that, that I look back on his presentation, okay, I can kind of see some similarities with me, but for the most part, it was different, you know, like I get super fixated on things too, but definitely not the rambunctious inability to do as you're told and stay seated and complete a task kind of thing. So it was definitely different for me. But then I ended up, well, I went to my doctor, actually my primary care physician. And I said, cause he knows I have been diagnosed with depression and anxiety my whole life. But every time anyone put me on medication for it, it either caused really bad things to happen or it just simply didn't work at all. And I would try to convince myself maybe it was working, but it definitely was not. And so when I said something to him, because I said, you know, I'm really happier now than I have been, than I can ever remember being as an adult. And this was, you know, probably a year or so ago that I said that to him. And he said, yeah, the diagnosis of depression and anxiety, even bipolar, none of that fit. None of it made sense. He said, yeah, we're taking that out of your chart. You're definitely not. That's not your issue. Because I've been off meds because none of them were helping for years. And I've been fine as far as my emotion. And so he took that out of the chart. But then after I started talking to this lady and researching about ADHD and everything, when I went back to him, I said, I'm really starting to think I have ADHD. And he said, yeah, you need to go to a psychiatrist because there's definitely something going on. And that probably makes sense. So he sent me to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist, I had like an hour long conversation with the psychiatrist. And I had already made a huge list of things looking back in my life, things that had happened, traits I've always had, things people have said to me to kind of explain and convince him of what I pretty much knew to be true. And it didn't take long. Actually, it was two different psychiatrists who pretty much right away said, yeah, you've got it. But the first one I didn't really like. He wanted to send me to a lab, like LabCorp, to get blood work done. I think it was to drug test me. And then when I got there, he hadn't sent the order over. When I called his office, he didn't answer. They said, you know, a voice recording or whatever came on saying that they would get back to me within 24 hours, which doesn't help me when I'm standing at LabCorp. So I quickly left him and went and found a different psychiatrist. And that one said the same thing. And that was only a couple of months ago. So I'm still very newly diagnosed. And I've probably binge listened to about 50 of your podcast episodes at this point. So I still got several to go, but it's definitely helped me a lot. And I'm still kind of learning about myself. And I feel like I'm best friends with everybody I've listened to on your podcast. It's amazing.
Right? I know. When somebody tells me they've listened to that many episodes, I'm always like, God, you know a lot about me.
Yeah, you're kind of a celebrity. But I was so happy that you were good with me coming on the podcast, because there's nothing special about me. I'm just basic and normal, just your everyday person. But I think a lot of women out there are your basic, normal, everyday people, and they're struggling. And honestly, my whole family is sick of hearing the word ADHD come out of my mouth. So it's nice to talk to somebody else about it. They're kind of over it, I think.
I mean, I think that's basically why I started the podcast, because I was so fascinated, right? You know, it's interesting when you were talking about going to the psychiatrist with this long list of reasons in your life that you've come to this conclusion, and how we get into this situation where we're trying to convince the physicians that we have ADHD. Like, it just amazes me how few people understand it, how we're doing so much of the educating in terms of talking to the doctors, but at the same time, also filled with so much self-doubt, which is like, is this ADHD? Is this not? Maybe I got this wrong. Like, maybe I am making excuses. And yet there's clearly this long list of reasons why you have ADHD and all the evidence. And it's like looking over your whole life and seeing it, evidence of it everywhere. And yet at the same time, I think the very nature of it makes it so that we are endlessly questioning it, right?
Yes. Yeah, because I definitely feel like I need to, you know, not just convince the doctor, but in a way convince myself too, and be like, okay, ask me some challenging questions. Doubt me for a minute so that I can give you my evidence and so that I can go back. I mean, maybe I'm only looking in my life at the things that would support this, and I'm not paying attention to things that would contradict it, maybe. I don't know. But it definitely, every piece of my whole life makes so much sense now. And I forget who it was on one of the podcasts, but she said, it's a good feeling to know that, you know, choices you've made and things you've done don't speak to your moral character. It's really a matter of your brain works a certain way. And I feel like now it's kind of nice that I can just say, well, this is the way my brain works. I'm not going to fight it, you know, where I did fight it for so long. It's a lot of wasted energy. And it's just easier if I just know that certain things I'm going to be able to do, and just say, you know what, other things I may not be able to do, and I'm going to know it up front and not overcommit myself to something, because I know myself well enough now to know that there's no fighting my biology. And that's just the way that I am.
Right. And that's what I say when I'm like, there's, you know, when you have this diagnosis, it's not like you're handed some secret manual that tells you how to live with ADHD. I wish there was, because I feel like we've all been searching for it our whole lives. So it would be really nice. But like, it really is just about looking over some of these things that we did over the course of the years, being like, oh, it makes sense why that happened and why I didn't do this or why I did do this. And, you know, a lot of the time it's pretty dangerous. I mean, you were listing some of the like past, you know, history of some of the evidence that we have, and it's some serious stuff, right? Like the, you know, addictions and eating disorders, like, you know, it's not a happy experience for a lot of us, a lot with our ADHD. But I think at the same time, really just looking at ourselves with kindness is like the number one way in which we begin to heal after an adult diagnosis.
Yes. I know I've spoken to one of my very good friends who I've been friends with for probably 30 years. And it was no sooner out of my mouth than she said, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure I have it too. And it's kind of funny. Recently, I've actually started, because I don't really watch TV. My husband watches TV. And I sit there and do other things because he's learned I cannot sit and watch. I will do one of two things. I'll either fall asleep. Like if we go to a movie theater and I'm laying in one of those comfy lounge chairs, I will fall asleep and I'll start snoring and embarrass the hell out of him. Or I'm going to get up nonstop. And so like in many ways, like I used to work for his, the company that he works for a short period of time. I kept up the website, but it was nonstop spreadsheets. Boring. I mean, I love spreadsheets, love them. I love algebra too. I'm kind of weird, but I could not sit for that length of time. And he would remark to me because his desk is right here next to mine. And he would say, "Oh my God, you're getting up again." I'm like, you know, I'd get up to go to the bathroom, get up to get a snack, get up to get coffee, get up to switch the laundry over. I could not just sit at this computer nonstop. I can't. And thank God I found my way into a career where I don't have to do that. But yeah, the constant, I don't even remember what you said now. I don't remember the question. Or what we were talking about, what got me started.
Well, you know, it reminds me of something else that you had talked about when you had reached out to me that I wanted to ask you about. One of the things that I remember happening when I was diagnosed was like a lot of the things, you know, a lot of the descriptions of ADHD, like moves a lot, fidgets, can't sit still, hyperactive. I never would have thought of myself as that person. Now I'm like, oh, I'm hella that person. I just like, it just never occurred to me. And I think there's so many things that like, I just never paid attention to about myself that now I'm like, oh no, I am actually that person. And I wonder, I think it was something like you were talking about a comment from your first husband that you now looked back and, you know, he had made some negative comment when you were separating where he was like, you can't hold down a job. And it almost like went over your head at the moment, but then looking back, you're like, oh, that's a really dick move. And it kind of reminded me of the way that like, we're spending so much time struggling and treading water that a lot of the time these things go over our heads. And it's only once we sit back and start to like evaluate the situation that you're like, oh yeah, I was really struggling. Or, oh yeah, that was a really mean thing that person did.
Well, and at that time, I feel like I thought that he was basically saying that because I only had a 2-year degree at that time, and it was an AA degree. So it wasn't really like I could go do anything with that degree at the time. And so that's kind of what I thought he meant was, you know, I don't immediately have a way. But that's not what he said. What he said was, you can't hold a job. And I think he knew something about me that I didn't even know. I think everybody kind of knew I was a hot mess. But I don't know. I think those people who knew me well, I think people who knew me in passing probably thought I had it pretty together, but at different stages of my life. And it definitely, you know, the times in my life where things were changing, like with the depression and anxiety and all of that. And at one time I was 100 pounds heavier, for instance. Being that heavy, I got that way because I was miserable. I was sitting at home. I was a homemaker. He didn't want me to work. And that's kind of the role that he had, I don't want to say forced me into, but, you know, I had fallen into, and he probably didn't imagine I could get myself out of that role very easily. When it comes to structure and activity through my life, times of higher structure and higher activity, I would definitely thrived much more. Like when I went away to college, had a terrible time. I had always been a 4.0 or higher student, you know, if you count my, what do you call it, the weighted GPA. I had always done really well, graduated summa cum laude, but the minute that I went away to college, I got like B's and C's and I kind of went a little nuts, and I took all afternoon classes because there was no way in heck I was waking up in the morning to go to school. And I was really struggling in college and I couldn't make up my mind what I wanted to do. I changed majors over and over again. I was pre-dental. I was pre-law. I was marketing, you know, business administration is what I did finally get my AA in because it seemed generic enough to kind of cover me because I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. And then when I met my first husband, he said, well, I want you to stay at home and be a homemaker. And that sounded like an easy out because I couldn't make up my mind. And, you know, I was married to him for 11 years and it's not that he was a bad person at all. And the problem was most people looked at the way that I lived and thought that it was great. And that I should be happy because I didn't have to work and he was taking care of me. And that wasn't stimulating enough at all. And I think that's why I ended up homeschooling my kids, just because I needed something challenging to do. And then when I finally got to a point, I mean, I had a back injury. They put me on, back in that time, there was no thought of the problems that being on narcotics long-term could cause. And I was on them for like 3 years, sick as a dog on them. And the pain, it was ever present. And then it wasn't until I started doing my own research and realizing that those medications can cause pain if you are addicted to them and your body's dependent on them. So I quit it. I just woke up one day and I was like, I'm going to die if I stay in this current situation with this husband and with this purpose in life or lack thereof, and on these medications, and I was 280 pounds. And it's like all of a sudden, and this is where I think my impulsivity served me well. I just decided that was the end of it. I was done. I was going to leave him, get off the medication, because I realized it was actually causing more harm than good. It wasn't helping me anymore. Went back to school, just kind of changed everything. And as far as treading water, which I know I've heard you say a lot, and the way that I think about the treading water my whole life is, have you ever been in the ocean swimming with other people and you're all treading water as far as you know, but then you realize they're up on like a sandbar and you're still kicking really hard underneath to stay, but you can't tell. You're looking at them and you think, well, they're doing exactly the same thing I am. They look like they're doing the same thing. You know, their arms are going around like this. You know, they look like they're doing the same. No, you're working so much harder and you have no way of knowing that because you can't see beneath the water. And that's kind of the way I feel like it's been my whole life, where you look at other people and you think that they're going through the same thing, but they're not. Except for the few people maybe that you become friends with who, lo and behold, have the same issues you do, you know? And so every time I've ever spoken with any of my friends, they all kind of confirmed kind of what I was going through. Yeah. We all have problems with indecision. We all have, you know what I mean? It, probably because they have it too. And we're all drawn to each other. Yeah, so I really had terrible issues, like in school, even having a 4.0 GPA, reading. And again, at the time, I didn't know that reading was such a problem. I didn't know that, I just assumed it kind of everyone was like this. I needed to try harder. I needed to focus because my brain would, halfway through a paragraph, I could read better than anyone. You know, in school, reading out loud, if I took, you know, they would always have us like take turns reading through the chapter, like in these classes, and I would read, and I would read with perfect inflection, pausing at the commas like I'm supposed to, pronouncing everything correctly. But then ask me later what it was that I read. I could not tell you. My brain just would take a hiatus, and I couldn't even tell you where in that paragraph or page my brain took off. And so I'd have to go back and read again and read again and read again. And so I got pretty good, I think, at compensating and just kind of going back and looking at the highlights and skimming the text really fast, because, you know, I've reread the same page 5 times, still couldn't tell you every detail on it. And I'd have to just move on because I've got, you know, 50 pages to read and I can't get through them all. But nobody ever thought I had an issue because I wasn't a behavioral problem. Even though I was antsy, it was almost physically painful to sit for long periods of time, I still managed. You know, so difficulty sitting, well, no, I sit, I do what I'm supposed to do, you know, but definitely the talking was, if you look at my report cards, it's, well, Melody's, you know, very creative. She's very intelligent, but she talks too much and she distracts the other kids. And they would always put my desk out in the hallway.
Yeah, same.
Or up by the teacher. Or I would bring, and I've heard this with a lot of people on your podcast, like making friendship bracelets and selling them. Or I would buy candy at wholesale cost, you know, from Sam's. And then I would sell them for 5 cents a piece, you know, and I would distract the class in that way. Because while we were all trying to learn, or while other people were trying to learn something I had already figured out, you know, I was bored. I would be sitting there selling candy in the middle of class, or asking them what color they wanted their friendship bracelet to be, or whatever the case may be. And it was always an issue. But that didn't raise any red flags for anyone, apparently. You know, I've made a long list here, and I've probably already talked my way through the whole list without even looking at it. But my mom would put tights on me, and see, I don't know if this is this hypersensitivity thing. I haven't decided if that's, I don't know if you can definitively say if that's an ADHD thing to have an issue like with clothing. Like my mom would put tights on me. I hated them. It would make me almost nauseous, the feeling of it on my legs. I would take them off and stuff them in my lunchbox. As soon as I got out of the car and got inside, I'd run to the bathroom, take them off and stuff them in my lunchbox. And those stupid tights came home in my lunchbox every single day. And I couldn't wear jeans until I kind of was forced to eventually, I guess, somewhere around high school age. But prior to that, shorts. And after school, I was running around in a bathing suit. We lived on a lake. And so when I came home, I threw on my bathing suit. I went outside. I played outside, went swimming in the lake, swang on my swing, listening to Wham on a cassette over and over and over and over and over again. Just weird little quirks like that. Like I did the same thing later with the Golden Girls. I would play it nonstop in the background, like all the time. I could probably tell you every single word to every episode at this point. You know, and rearranging my furniture when I was a kid. In the middle of the night, I would stay up and I would go on this rampage of just my bed, you know, is over here. It's going to be against that other wall in the morning, you know, when my mom finally comes in and I'm finally passed out. But moving all of the furniture around constantly, I did it probably once a month. I got tired of things being the same. But so many like weird little quirks like that.
Any other parents out there who have struggled to instill good financial habits into their kids? I know I have. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, GoHenry by Acorns, the smart debit card and app for kids 6 through 18. With GoHenry, kids can learn about money, set spending and saving goals, and even track chores and earn allowance money right within the app. They learn the value of money by using their GoHenry debit cards, while we as parents can set spend limits and help guide their journey while staying informed every step of the way. It gives me so much peace of mind to know that I'm using a smart tool to proactively teach my kids about money and prepare them for future success. Set your kids up for success and get started today at GoHenry.com/WomenADHD. Again, that's GoHenry.com/WomenADHD. TNCs apply. Renews from $4.99 per month unless canceled.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
It is so amazing to me because it's really this so beautifully describes that feeling of like everything I did is explained somehow as an ADHD trait. It's like there is no me without ADHD. So I love all of this.
Right. So, you know, where does the ADHD end and your personality begin? Like, I don't know that I can figure that out. So my mom and my dad had very keen observations about me, but no one put it together with ADHD. So my dad always said, Melody, you're brilliant, but you have no stick-to-itiveness. I did so many different things, but I could not stick to anything for long at all. And, you know, he wanted me, like I played tennis for a long time. I don't know, I guess I started about 5 years old and played through middle school, high school. But even then, I never had the drive like a lot of people do to like really perfect it and get really good. You know, I probably could have been amazing if I had done that. And that's kind of where the regret piece, I feel like, comes in. Like, I feel like if I had just tried a little harder, same thing with my grades. You know, I graduated high in my class, but I wasn't the valedictorian. You know what I mean? Could I have been if I had actually applied myself, as they say? Because everything was procrastinating. I would wait till the night before, pull an all-nighter. And of course, things would go wrong, you know, and then it's like, oh crap, well, now I need something that I didn't know I needed, like the printer's out of ink or whatever the case may be. And now I'm really in trouble. And it took me a really long time to kind of find a workaround for that. But my mom would tell me that she would say, once I learned to do something, you never want to do it again. She said that to me all the time. And, you know, well, yeah. So, you know, it was the same thing with drawing. I did a lot of artwork growing up, and some of my coworkers, but my peers at school wanted to buy some of my artwork. And my mom said, absolutely not. She said, you can sell one when you make two of them. When you have one and you make a second one exactly like it, then you can sell one of them, but you're going to hold on to the original one you did. I'm like, well, mom, who the heck wants to do the same piece of artwork twice? That's ridiculous. Like, but my mom didn't understand at all, but she wanted me to hold on to everything. I'm like, no. And my mom always said, like, my sister's 15 years older than I am. And my sister would get very upset because I had a major bad attitude when I would come home from school. And I overheard my mom many times kind of like sticking up for me and saying, well, she's had a hard day and she can't take it out on anybody at school. So she takes it out on me when she comes home. And it's like, my mom understood that that was the situation, but no one could figure out that there was an actual issue, you know, underlying that.
That's so interesting. You know, again, it's like the sticking to itiveness that so many of us were criticized about not having, you know, and how many of us have that difficulty with like the last 5% of any project or, you know, getting to that finish line. It's just not important to us. Like, finishing isn't interesting. And I find that so fascinating, right? Because it's like, with all the hobbies that we take up, all the things we learn, all the things we get excited about, that's the interesting part. So like, why have we decided that finishing is so important? I think like so much of those things are about framing, right? Like I was the same way. I couldn't hold down a job for longer than 2 years, but I'm still that way, right? And so it's like, just the phrasing, you can't hold down a job, it's so negative. And yet, like, all it is really just wanting a new experience every couple of years and wanting a change. And like, when did we decide that having a job for a long period of time was, you know, the moral superiority? Like,
exactly. Well, and I mean, I remember in high school saying to my dad, you know, there was a class that I didn't want to take. I don't remember what it was now. And he said, Melody, you need all of these classes to be a well-rounded person. Well, guess what? I have done that. I mean, I have a list of probably, you know, 50 different hobbies that I've dropped a considerable amount of money to start on and learn and do something with, and then eventually leave it to go do something else. I've had enough education at this point. I could have been a doctor. Unfortunately, I'm not that I could handle that. You know, I look at what the doctors do that I work with, and they're working kind of around the clock, and it's all the time. I don't think I would want to do that anyway. I mean, right now I was working full time. My mom was not doing so great. She had oral cancer, had to have half of her tongue removed. And my brother-in-law has colon cancer, and it has now gone through his peritoneum and his abdominal cavity, and he's gone through 2 rounds of chemo. The last chemo it wasn't showing any improvement. So they took him off of that. And now he's going to be starting immunotherapy. We go on Thursday about that. But if I were a doctor, I wouldn't be able to just say, okay, well, I'm not going to do my full-time job anymore. I'm going to, you know, just kind of grab shifts when it suits me, which is what I'm doing now. I have gotten a job with 3 different companies. I grab shifts to cover people when they're out. And I mean, it has created a little bit of a pay cut because obviously I'm not working as many hours, but I'm able to get enough to get by. And I can still be here for my mom and my brother-in-law and everyone else in my family. And so I feel like that's worth a lot. So that's what I chose to do. It's not that I couldn't hold a full-time job. It's that I didn't see that the extra income from the full-time position warranted, you know, it wasn't worth what I was giving up. So, because my mom and my brother-in-law both don't really have a whole lot of medical understanding or verbiage, you know, their vocabulary with medical stuff, they are confused easily. And so it's good to be able to go with them to these doctor's appointments and understand what the doctor's telling them and kind of tell it to them the way that they need to hear it so that they understand. And so that I remember for them, you know, or take down notes, what the doctor said, what the, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it's really helpful for me not to be working a paid job full time. Let me tell you, I'm working full time hours. It's just not at a paid job.
Yeah. I wonder how many choices we've made in our lives like that, that are really come from a sense of altruism. And you know, like, yes, we always talk about being people pleasers, but a lot of the time we have incredible amounts of empathy. And so a lot of those decisions are putting others we love first, right? Whether it comes to our partners, like you said, like making decisions so that your partner's happy. We do that a lot of the time because it, in many ways also makes us happy, but then we feel like we also have put ourselves last all the time. So then we have self-worth issues. So it's like, it's really complicated and complex, but I think that there's like a lot of those situations where we make decisions. And I think the idea, like you were just the way you were explaining, like having these different part-time jobs that are all going to have give you a more flexible schedule so that you can take care of your mom and your brother, like all of that makes perfect sense in the moment. You know, if somebody else was looking at that and said, oh, Melody can't hold down a full-time job. Look, here she is cobbling together a bunch of jobs. And like, it's so much of it is about how we look at those choices. And so I'm glad you're able to kind of talk yourself through like, yes, these were all very meaningful choices I made in my life. And every choice is going to have a pro and a con. And there's we're always going to have that what if, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, I think we probably make a lot more really smart decisions than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, that there is a need, like in my profession, x-ray techs are desperately needed, especially here in Florida. I could have probably more than full-time hours if I wanted them working PRN because everybody just needs techs right now. And when I talk to people who are working full-time at these places, 95% of them say, oh my God, I could never do that. You know, I've got different logins at every place. One of the places, the password has to be 13 characters long at least. And so keeping track of my logins, the door codes are different at every place. Their procedures for patient movement through them is different. The number of views and the kind of views for each x-ray that you're supposed to get are different depending on the doctor, depending on the company. And it's a lot to kind of keep track of, but it's enough of a challenge I have found to actually keep me pretty happy. But most people say they can never do it. They're like, oh God, nah. They want to come in. They want a predictable schedule. They know that they're coming in. They know what they're dealing with. They want to not have surprises. And I kind of thrive on it. As a matter of fact, this should have probably told me something because I know with COVID, you know, a lot of people were kind of diagnosed because of the dysfunction during COVID. For me, it was the opposite because I graduated with my radiologic technologist license and degree and everything in December of 2019. I was hired at a hospital in February of 2020, and my orientation was March 17th of 2020. And it was like, it was a two-day orientation. My second day was the first one canceled because of the no groups of 10 or more rule. And so I was out on my own, like trying to figure all this stuff out, you know, like the PPE thing that we all had to go through. Nobody knew proper PPE donning and doffing at the hospital because you didn't have to do it very often. And the, you know, in school, it was like, oh, this is just for the rare TB patient. Well, little did we know what was going to happen. Every day was different when I came into that hospital. And I was working, in the beginning, I was PRN, but I was getting more than full-time hours. I was getting a lot of overtime because there was a hiring freeze right after COVID started. And I was the last person hired before the hiring freeze for the radiology department at the hospital. And every day it was different. We didn't know what the new mandates were going to be about the masks. There were shortages of everything, the gowns, the masks, the shields, the everything. There was a shortage constantly. I wasn't even fully fit tested for my mask. We went with just like, yeah, you're probably a medium when you put it on, blow up, blow down, blow to each side. And if no air comes out, then that's your size. There was no legitimate mask testing or fit testing when I got there because they couldn't afford to waste masks like that. They had to hold on to every mask they had. So everything kept changing. We were changing the kinds of masks we were using. They were kept behind lock and key. It was really stimulating because it was always changing and I thrived. I was doing really well and it was straight out of school. And the number of chest x-rays in a typical, I mean, you figure all of these patients that were in ICU who were intubated, I would have to go up and, you know, put the board under their back to x-ray them. It was really, really laborious work and nonstop. I mean, I would take off with the portable machine from the, you know, the portable x-ray machine from the department, and I'd be gone for like 3 hours just x-raying chest x-ray after chest x-ray after chest x-ray for the most part. And then I'd come back to the department, get something to drink, and like often just head right back out again. And, you know, as a rad tech, I would also operate the C-arm in the OR for surgeries and stuff like that. There was one particular time that a patient coded on the table in the OR, and I had a student with me, and he was operating the C-arm, and I was like, oh, back the C-arm out. We got a problem here. And we had to do CPR on that patient. And I have never been more focused in my whole life than in that chaos when, you know, all these nurses are coming in and they're bringing in the defibrillator and a lot was going on, but it was like my brain was more clear than it had ever been. That should have really been a tip off because nobody else had that kind of feeling about it, you know?
I know, right? And like in the moment, you're like, why would it be a tip off? That's just how I work best. And now you're like, oh yeah, okay, that makes a lot of sense. How did you, like your nervous system must have been through the roof during that time. How did you like decompress? Because I feel like that's something that a lot of us struggle with, which is like getting ourselves, you know, we really thrive in those high stress situations. And there's, you know, it makes sense why there's so many people with ADHD in the medical field, especially nursing. But burnout is a very, very real side effect of operating on that kind of frequency.
Yeah, I tried many different things. You know, like I said, at the time I was PRN and then eventually they hired me as full-time. When I went full-time, things were a little bit more predictable because I knew I was working three 12-hour shifts. So I worked Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And because it was those 3 days in a row, by the end of my shift on Tuesday, I really did need all of Wednesday to recover. And you know, coming in, once again, not knowing what normal is in a hospital, because COVID was my first experience in a hospital. So I didn't know what their normal situation was. This is all I know, looking back on it now, because I still work in a hospital and other places. It definitely was like at another level that most people don't ever have to deal with or never will again, hopefully. That level of constant going, I would get over 20,000 steps a day while I was working there. I also, and it's counterintuitive, and I don't know if everyone's like this, but I would wake up at 3:30 in the morning and go for a run. And I would make sure that I had my smoothie, like to center myself in the morning before I would go in. And, you know, I told the psychiatrist when we were discussing treatment, I said, honestly, of everything that any doctor has ever given me, any ever prescribed me, any kind of medication, none of it ever worked. And what has worked far better is exercise and eating non-processed foods. That's helped me more than anything. And I knew that before I was ever diagnosed, that that made a huge impact on how I felt and my behavior and everything else. But that's pretty much, you know, like I said, Wednesday all day, I just discounted it. That was my recovery day and making sure I took care of myself. And that morning from 3:30 to like 5, that was my time because there was no way I was getting any time the rest of the day.
Wow. So interesting. And I completely agree. I think that even, and it doesn't have to be like, a 5K run or going to a HIIT class or anything. I just feel the biggest difference in my cognitive abilities come when I have like done something to elevate my heart rate in the morning, whatever that is. And yeah, I think that works for me, works better than any medication I've tried so far.
Yeah. And yoga too. Yoga is phenomenal. And if I took the amount of time out of the day that I would like to do, you know, to take to exercise and do, I mean, I would ideally spend about an hour or two every day because it makes, I'm no happier anywhere than when I'm on the yoga mat, but trying to find the time has proven difficult, especially when we tend to overcommit. So, yeah.
Hey friend, if there's one thing I've learned about ADHD over the last few years is that we can thrive with the right combination of accountability, planning, coaching, and peer support. Knowing all this, I set out to create the ultimate all-in-one coaching and accountability community for adults with ADHD or learning disabilities. I knew I couldn't do it alone, so I joined forces with one of my favorite ADHD coaches, Alex Gilbert of Capable Consulting, and together we launched the ADHD Lounge. The Lounge was created as a safe place for neurodivergent adults away from other social media, where we offer live group calls, co-working, and body doubling every weekday for accountability, focus, and skill development. We have weekly and monthly goal planning sessions to keep yourself on track. We also have one-on-one office hours with myself and Alex, and of course, friendship and lots of peer support. We have three different membership levels to meet you where you're at. So if you're looking for an affordable way to stay connected, productive, and accountable, while also having regular access to ADHD coaching and expertise, then make sure to come join me in the ADHDLounge.com. Again, that's the ADHDLounge.com. And as a listener of the Women in ADHD podcast, you can get 30% off your first month with the code PODCAST30. So head to the ADHDLounge.com and use the code PODCAST30 to get 30% off your first month. During the early days of my diagnosis, as I was deep into hyper-focus ADHD research mode, I kept searching for some kind of all-in-one, everything you ever needed to know about ADHD in women handbook that I could reference and keep at my fingertips, but I never really found anything that suited me. That's why I've taken everything I've learned about ADHD in women and adults who are socialized as girls, and I've gathered it into a concise, easy-to-access, self-guided, and self-paced course so you can feel like you've got everything you need at your fingertips. It's called Hey, It's ADHD, and it has everything you need to start loving your brain and living a more fulfilling, gratifying life. I built this course to be helpful wherever you are on your ADHD journey. I am so excited to finally be able to offer this course, and I truly hope this will help you develop a deeper understanding of your ADHD brain and how to embrace it as you build yourself a toolkit for your own life. So head over to womenandadhd.com and click on the Hey, It's ADHD course tab for more information and to get started.
You know, it's, I think a lot of us were drawn to yoga as well because we intuitively knew that meditation and mindfulness was really, really important for our nervous systems, but we also knew that we couldn't sit still. And so yoga is like the perfect tool for people with ADHD because it gets you to that meditative state, but you're still in a flow and you're still moving. I'm like, that's another one where I'm like, teachers, nurses, and yoga instructors seem to be like the most common people I meet in terms of, adult diagnosis being like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was a teacher before I did this. I was a math teacher for 4 years. And
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, your resume definitely has ADHD all over it. That's funny.
Yeah, it does. I don't know how I escaped anyone knowing, you know, or maybe everyone, like I said, just thought I already knew and didn't bother to say anything because it was so obvious. I don't know.
Well, that's why I'm curious with your kids. Your son was diagnosed, but what about your daughter? Do you think she has it? Can we even, or if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine. But I'm curious, like, have you had this conversation with them about ADHD in the family? Because I know, you know, we sit around and we diagnose all of our family members.
Well, and everyone I get along with. I mean, it's funny because I almost feel like if I hit it off with someone, you probably should go get checked because you probably have it too. Because it's like, I'm just fast friends with so many people, but my daughter is tired of hearing it. I think, I don't think she thinks she has it. I think she does, but because she's rather successful at the moment, I think it's not hurting her enough to really care, or to investigate it because she ended up working in healthcare through one of my employers, they had a program. And so it was an awesome program, just took her in and paid for everything. And she's a medical assistant now, and they're paying for her college. So it kind of gave her the push that I think I did not have. And my son does not have. He lives with my mom right now, and he kind of can't figure things out either. He's stuck. He's paralyzed with indecision, doesn't know what he wants to do, kind of jumps all over the place. And yeah, he already had his first appointment today with a psychiatrist that I said, you really need to go. And so, like I said, he was diagnosed, I think he was probably, he was in second grade, whatever age that is. And he was put on Vyvanse and got facial tics. And so they told me it could be permanent, even if we stop him on it. And I thought, oh crap. So let's stop him on it, because I feel like I was medicating him for selfish reasons, just because it was crazy to try to teach him, with him the way that he was, just so distractible and throwing tantrums every time, you know, I would say, well, you need to do your 20 minutes of reading, you know, whatever it was, you know, it was just a fight. But then I took him off of that and said, no, I'll just wait and see if he decides he wants to go on it, because I was just scared of side effects with him at that point. But oh my God, the familial component. I've told both of them, if you didn't have it, it would be more of a miracle, because everyone in my family, I mean, I look back at my father, there is no doubt that man had ADHD, and probably his mother. So my grandmother left, she divorced my dad's dad, married someone else. And now you can imagine how long ago this was. I mean, my dad, if he had lived, would have been 80 something now. So this was a long time ago. This woman left her husband, married someone else, then divorced that man and went back and married my grandfather again. And that was really not, I mean, shoot, most people would think that's not normal now, let alone way back then. My great aunt, I think she was diagnosed bipolar, but I wouldn't doubt it if she had ADHD and just was kind of misdiagnosed, because she definitely, I guess, and I even never even met her, but from what I understand, she definitely self-medicated a lot. My aunt, same thing. She definitely was addicted to lots of things and was my most fun relative. So that kind of tells me, you know, I mean, I had a great time with her. But my dad, he quit his job like in the middle of the day, came home and was just like, yep, I'm done. And my mom's like, what? You know, here they are with children and they're struggling. And he just decided he was going to quit his job. He would do a lot of different hobbies. I guess they bought like angelfish. They bought 4 angelfish and, or maybe 6, I don't know. And ended up with 2 pairs of mates out of that. And they had baby angelfish. And so pretty soon my mom said every wall in their house was lined with aquariums and he was selling angelfish. He had a job. And when he would go out on his job, he would do his side hustle of selling angelfish to pet stores while he was out. I mean, does this not scream ADHD to you? Then he went to kite making. He made kites, and then he was a pilot. And my dad certainly had the attitude that if you're going to do something, do it right. Which, if that's not, I mean...
I think of so many of us who were that similar, you know, just had so many passions and so many things pulling us in so many directions and just that childlike enthusiasm and curiosity. And yet, like, it's so wonderful to think of. And yet in ourselves, we struggle so much with how people roll their eyes or, you know, or you're too much or you're not enough. Like, it's just so colossally sad at how so many of these wonderful qualities that so many of us possess just end up turning us into such depressed adults. I just get so overwhelmed sometimes with how sad it is that so many wonderful people end up like this. And, you know, it's funny because when you were talking about your daughter, you know, like one of the things, so both my kids were diagnosed after me, but my husband is one of the ones who, like, we've been together 22 years now. And like, I cannot for the life of me decide if he has ADHD or not, because there's so many things that he has very similar qualities about, but he also is a white male who has basically had secretaries, me, his mom, you know, like he's never really had to struggle in the way that so many of us had. And so I'm like, is the ADHD the struggle part? Is it the part of us that's like really, you know, because if you're pathologizing it, then yes, it is like the degree to which your life is impaired. And so if somebody has all these qualities, but they're just going around life being like, I'm great, what's the big deal? Then technically it's not ADHD, right? And that's the moment where I'm like, so then what are we talking about there? And, you know, we have those neurospicy or whatever the term is that you want to come up with it. But that's where I get really confused, because I'm like, are we still talking about, is it still ADHD if your life's great and you have no problems?
Right. Well, if our environment molded to us, obviously we wouldn't have a problem. And honestly, I think the same thing. You could have just been describing my husband, honestly, because one of the reasons I think that we work so beautifully together. I mean, I've been with him now for 12 years. And, you know, 3 years in with my ex-husband, I wanted to kill him and hang myself. It was terrible. With my husband, though, we are so well suited for each other. And he plans things nonstop. And he also has the adage of, if you're going to do something, just do it right. And like, if he gets a new passion, like clay shooting, next thing you know, we're driving 3 hours away to go to a special place so that we can find the exact right gun and da 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 da. So I have also said, well, gee, is it possible that he could have it? But regardless, because he says absolutely not. But at the same time, like you said, he has me doing everything for him. And if I ever complain about this, he says, well, I already told you everybody should have a Melody. Yeah. He's got me. He's got me doing everything for him. So I'm like, well, crap. I guess if I were in his shoes and I wasn't brought up in the same society, you know, that's telling me what I should be doing as a woman, then maybe I would be really super successful. But yeah, he definitely keeps things changed up enough to where I'm never like, he constantly supplies me with dopamine. You know, we're always going, we're always having a good time. It's always something different every weekend. If he spends one day of a weekend at home without something to do, he's grandly annoyed. Like sometimes, well, hon, I do need to food prep. You know, I need to go to the grocery store. I need to do the laundry. But he wants to be going, going, going all the time. So, and it's nice here because we've got the theme parks and, you know, there are a lot of things to do here. So it works out. Thankfully, he's got the money to foot that bill. So I don't. Yeah. I mean, I've wondered about him, but there's no way he would never try to see about a diagnosis or even admit it. Even if he thought I was right, he would never say, yeah, you're right. No way.
Oh my God. Oh, my husband's the same. It's the same. It's so funny. I can't, he's going to be so mad at me that I said that, but it's like, cause those are those moments where I'm like, well, do you think that I'm just a hot mess? Cause like, do you really, you know, it's like, I feel like the stereotype and the stigma of ADHD comes out when he's like, yeah, yeah, that's nice that you have it. No, I do not have it. Like, he won't even talk about it. He's like, I definitely don't have it. And I'm like, okay, but I'm the one who was always like following him around because he loses his glasses everywhere. And he never knows when his next dentist appointment is. He doesn't know what's happening in the calendar. And I'm the one who's always like, you need a system. You need a system. And then, so you're like, both of those things scream ADHD, right? The person who's always losing things, and then the person who has a very rigid system for everything because I've lost things my whole life. And so like both of those personality traits are, you know, compensating for your ADHD.
Yes. Well, and that's what I feel like they need to tell people too, because when you look up like the DSM criteria, and I mean, I took lots of psychology classes. I've taken probably 4 psychology classes because I always found it extremely interesting. Honestly, they should screen people who take psychology classes and say, you know what? You may want to check yourself because it seems to be a common thread. But I've taken a lot of them. And back when it was the DSM-4 criteria, I would read through. I'm like, yeah, none of that applies to me. But you know what? I would get to places an hour early. Who the heck does that? You know, but that was my fail safe to make sure, because I knew. And in talking to my husband recently, I was like, okay, so on certain days when I go to this place, you know, if I go to the hospital, I'm not going to do my hair that day because it's going to be in a scrub cap anyway, who cares? And so that takes 15 minutes off of the time that it takes me to get ready in the morning. So then you know, but when I go there, I have to leave half an hour earlier than going anywhere else. So that actually means that that's 15 minutes earlier anyway that I have to get up. He's like, you're making this way too complicated. Why don't you just figure out the earliest time you have to get up at that time every day. And then if you have a little extra time, that's good, right? You don't, it doesn't matter that you can sit around and relax. And I'm like, yeah, you don't understand. If I relax, my brain is going to get involved with something because I have to fill every minute of every day. So if my brain gets involved, then I'll end up being late. And that is a common theme in my life. Anytime I have had extra time and I should have been more than on time, I should have been early, I've ended up being late. Whereas if I call it kind of down to the wire, I'm on time. You know, accidents. I had a car accident where I was at a stop sign and I left plenty early. I was supposed to get there. It was for a teacher's workshop. My ETA was like half an hour at least before I needed to be there. I was in plenty of time. But I came up to this stop sign and I looked to my left and there's a car coming, but he has his right turn blinker on and he's slowing down. So I think clearly this man intends to turn where I'm. It was the only place to turn in any visible, you know, distance from where I was sitting. So clearly he's turning. So I go ahead and start going and he changed his mind, plowed right into the side of me. Didn't even like started speeding back up again. He was slowing down and was going to turn, but changed his mind. He hit me. When the cop showed up on the scene and was talking to each of us about, you know, what happened, the police said, were you in a hurry? And I'm like, no, I really wasn't. There was no reason why I wouldn't have just waited to make sure that this guy was turning. There was absolutely no reason. But there's something like in me that kind of makes me a little impatient. And I know what that is now, but another car accident. I've had two car accidents that were partially at least my fault. That was one of them. The other one was 100% my fault. I was taking a friend back home from Gainesville. I was in college at the time, driving 75 miles an hour down I-75. This was back before we had GPS though. See, now GPS will reroute you if you miss your exit, but I didn't have that at the time. So I was getting off at this exit. I knew what the exit looked like. They had been doing construction there. They finished up the construction and everything was all put back together and there was landscaping and stuff. It was gorgeous. I'm like, oh crap, that's my exit. And so I look to make sure I'm in the center lane here. Look to make sure there was no one in the right lane that I would be cutting off. And by the time, and there wasn't anyone there, but by the time I looked and, you know, I was almost past the exit. So I ended up driving practically perpendicular across the exit, fishtailed, lost control of the car because I overcorrected and flipped my car into a ditch. Thank God. 5 minutes before this accident, I told my friend to put her seatbelt on because she never put her seatbelt on ever. But, you know, that was one more instance where impulsive and impatient and just drive to the next exit. But I didn't have GPS then. So I really wasn't familiar with where the next exit was or whatever, how I would go that way. Certainly the ADHD played into that too. And thank God nothing happened to my friend. Nothing happened to me. I mean, except, you know, chronic neck issues now, but you know, we both lived. But so many things like that could have been prevented had I known way earlier. You know, I picked up a hitchhiker one time with that same friend in the car, and she freaked out. Oh, she let me have it later. I don't even know what would possess me to do something like that. We were like 18. Why would I do that?
Because you saw somebody standing on the side of the road and you were like, I gotta help them.
Yes.
The turn signal one I find interesting too, because first of all, in Central Florida, chances are it's just an old person who's left their turn signal on and doesn't even realize it, right? Like, that's what I would think.
It's the other possibility. It was a car full or a truck full of Mexicans who spoke no English and had no insurance.
Because I was like, I feel like there's so many instances where somebody would have the turn signal on and not realize it. But, you know, that's such a good example of where you're like, well, why didn't I just wait for the car to leave? And there's like this insatiable drive for efficiency that comes with ADHD, which is like, it's not necessarily impatience. It's like a weird kind of efficiency. And as you were talking, it was reminding me of this thing I do with my fridge, which is like, So I open the fridge, you know, my fridge door has the ding now to let you know the door is open. And I play this little game when I open my fridge, which is like, I'm going to pull something out of the fridge and I'm going to try to use it and get it back in the fridge before the ding goes off, rather than just shut the door and then reopen the door and close it again. And so like one time my husband came along and he shut the, you know, he came into the kitchen and I was making a salad or something and like madly trying to get all the ingredients together before the ding happened. And he came along and shut the door and I got mad and I was like he ruined my game. And he was like, well, why would you leave the fridge door open? Like you're letting out cold air. And I was like, I know, but I was trying to see, like, as I was trying to explain this ridiculous game I had played, I was like, how do you even explain that other than just to know that this is like, there's an efficiency to only opening the door once and closing the door once, that I was like desperate to not do it twice. And I felt so absurd in that moment. But I was like, anyone with ADHD will understand that story because we do these things to like minimize effort in the weirdest inexplicable way. And that's what I thought when you were like, of course I'm going to turn.
Well, and in ways that it actually causes more effort.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, because I mean, I was thinking about it today because I was actually thinking about the podcast earlier when I was getting out of the car because I was thinking what I had to do today. And I thought, you know, this is a perfect example. I had my tea travel mug, my empty cup that I had my smoothie in, my big water bottle. And as I was picking it up, my thought process was make one trip into the house. I'm going to grab everything in one trip.
I was just going to say it's the multiple trips are for sissies mentality with groceries, right?
Yeah, which is probably why so many things around me get damaged. You know, I drop them and I don't necessarily learn. I'm trying now that I realize that these are my compulsions. I'm trying to be aware of them and like kind of talk myself off the ledge. Melody, leave it there. You can come back in a minute and get it. It's really, who cares if you get an extra, you know, 100 steps today? That's a good thing, you know? But yeah, it's definitely, that's how I end up breaking things and hurting myself and trying to do too much too fast. I've got a burn on my arm from yesterday, trying to be quick in the kitchen.
Or missing the exit.
Yeah.
Right? The example of mixing the exit, where you're like, I could have probably just taken the next one and been 5 minutes late, but no. Yeah. I feel like I could use examples for the next few hours. This has been so interesting. Oh my God. I feel like people who are listening to this podcast right now are probably getting whiplash from nodding their heads along with this. There are so many really good ones in this. Would you call ADHD something else? I'm just wondering if it's like something to do with like insatiable drive for efficiency or something. I don't know. But have you heard any other names for it that you like, or is there something you would call it?
I have not. Well, for one thing, I think that we need to just simply maybe keep the name for simplicity's sake, but have a public service announcement that goes out. Like there needs to be a commercial, maybe on particular things. Maybe we could do research and find out what kind of shows most women with ADHD like to watch. And we put the commercial there. I don't know. But definitely it would have been helpful if someone had given me actual reliable symptoms to kind of grab onto and say, oh yeah, being there too early could be a sign too. If we had to change the name, I think I would change it to SASS. It would be SASS, and that would be Scattered and Spectacular Syndrome.
Oh.
For one thing, plenty of people would be going and looking for a diagnosis of this because it sounds so cool. But certainly everyone I meet, you know, and this is what I started to say earlier and then totally got sidetracked what I was saying. My husband watches TV. So, you know, you've watched America's Got Talent. It doesn't really hold my interest. It does. I can't watch anything for very long, but he has that on. And I was looking at the panel of judges. So you've got Howie Mandel. He's a pretty interesting person. So I look him up. Sure enough, he's got ADHD. Then you look at the next one, Heidi. Okay. Okay. I don't know that Heidi is in my mind. I mean, I'm sure she's a great person, but I don't feel like she's someone I'd get along with. Let's put it that way. She does not have it. But then Mel B, okay? Mel B and I could kick it any day of the week. And so I looked her up and I'm like, holy crap, she's got it too.
It's so true. Oh my God, this is so true.
So I feel like spectacular is a thing that runs in all of us. Every woman that I listen to on your podcast, they're all flipping amazing. And they're people that I feel like would be really fun at parties. So that would be my word for it. But on a serious note, you're familiar with Myers-Briggs, right?
Uh-huh.
I feel like we should have some kind of multidimensional, you know, because we're all on a spectrum somewhere. And not just a two-dimensional spectrum, but like a three-dimensional spectrum. We all fall in there somewhere. And I feel like there needs to be a name for these axes. Like maybe one axis is impulsivity and another, you know, whatever. And I feel like we should all, based on our brain type, fall in a particular place in that space, in that spectrum, where, you know, just like with Myers-Briggs, you're like ENTP or whatever that describes your personality. And honestly, it would be kind of interesting to see if certain Myers-Briggs types, I forget what you call them now, but if certain ones are typical of ADHD people, you know what I mean? But I feel like that way it's not like, okay, you have this disorder. It's just, this is your brain type and these are everyone else's brain types and we're all different. And where in that broad spectrum do you fall? Because I mean, ADHD, even people with ADHD, no two of us are exactly the same. So I feel like there should be more of just kind of a categorizing brain types in general, instead of like labeling something as being not normal, because what's normal?
That is brilliant. I love that, right? I've always said, like, if you've consistently said the words, what is wrong with me, uh-huh. then you want to look into a diagnosis. And I also feel like anyone who talks about their brain in the third person should look into a diagnosis, because that's one thing I notice in common. So many of us talk about our brain like it's a separate entity, like it's this roommate that we that sometimes we get along with, but sometimes, you know, spends our rent money and sleeps in too late and or keeps us up, right? But that idea that it's like you feel like you're separate from your brain feels like that's a pretty big indicator that you might want to look into this. But I love the idea of the different personality categories. That's brilliant.
I have talked to so many women though, just in the last 2 months, because you figure I do come across a lot of people in the course of a day doing what I do. And if I really hit it off with someone, I will tell them. I was recently diagnosed with ADHD, and these are the traits that I apparently have that would indicate a diagnosis is in order. And it's kind of like a hint, because I see it in people a lot. It's unbelievable. I mean, it almost makes me wonder if we're the normal ones and we've been the silent majority for our whole lives, you know, but I see it everywhere for sure.
Oh, well, this was awesome. Thank you so much, Melody. This is, I love chatting with you. I really feel like we probably, like with many of my guests, I feel like I probably could chat with you for hours and hours. So thank you so much for your time. And yeah, this is great.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was really a lot of fun. I wish I could have stayed on topic a little better, but I feel like the listeners will understand.
I was going to say, if anything, this podcast listeners are always along for the ride. And I love my favorite guests, as I've said before, my favorite guests are listeners who nod along to the other guests and are just like, I want to share my story, right? Like, I want to share my story. It's cathartic, but also, you know, just to know that if there's something out there that people are looking for or listening for, that they'll see themselves and realize, like, hey, I might be, what was it, sensational and
scattered and spectacular.
And scattered and and spectacular, right? Be like, there's nothing wrong with that, right?
Yes, yeah, certainly though, the first podcast of yours that I listened to made me cry. And then after that, other ones, I'm sure I was like, yes. Yes. And I'm like pointing to the dashboard, and I'm sure people driving next to me, because I have found that listening to the podcasts in the car while I'm driving keeps me patient. I can go like drive along in the right hand lane and I don't get irritated because my mind is engaged enough that I'm not super impatient. So that's helped a lot too. But yeah, I'm sure other people in the other cars are looking at me like, this lady must be on something or something. She's talking to herself. But yeah, definitely it has helped me a lot. So I appreciate you having me on.
Well, that reminds me, I wanted to, you have a gift for metaphor. And I really liked when you were talking about treading water and not realizing that some people are standing on a sandbar, which I think is really, really poignant. But you also talked about feeling like you've been forced to live life underwater and all the while being told that there's something wrong with me when I come up sputtering and gasping for air. And now I realized I just needed scuba gear. I thought that was so good. I wanted to at least bring that up here on the podcast because I was like, oh, I loved that.
Well, and I think it comes probably for a lot of us from trying to explain ourselves to people. You're searching desperately for some way to get people to understand. And so I think a lot of us have a real gift for metaphors. But yeah, I definitely feel like, you know, you wouldn't say that someone is, that there's something wrong with someone because they don't have gills. You would just say, you know, if you want to go there and you want to live in that environment, or, you know, there's a place down in South Florida where you can actually swim underwater and there's like an underwater, like place to stay, like a hotel where you scuba to it and stay in this hotel, which I think would be amazing to do. That's going to be my next thing. I'm going to have to get a scuba license or whatever, but, or certification. But you would never say that to anybody. You would never try to say that just because you don't adapt well in this particular environment, there's something wrong with you. And that's definitely what I felt like my whole life. Like I was never good enough. I mean, everything that you've already said a million times, I just needed the right tools. In my case, that largely is medication, and which I'm out of right now because I was really hoping I'd have it for this particular podcast. But yeah, I'm out of because my insurance company was having a hard time getting it at first because I got to get it through mail order. And then they said, I'm only allowed one tablet per day, which my doctor has said, no, I do better splitting the dose and having an XR tablet in the morning and an XR tablet like at lunchtime. It keeps me more stable throughout the whole day. But the insurance is fighting the doctor on it and saying, like, it's not a milligram issue. It's a number of tablets issue, which is bizarre to me.
I can't get medication either. I did get some that I had been rationing, and now my daughter's out. And so I've been giving her mine because she needs it for her tests. That's a whole other episode. But what you were talking about reminded me of Jessica McCabe from How to ADHD, when she did her TED talk and she talked about the fish. You know, you don't measure a fish's ability to climb a tree or whatever. I'm butchering it. But that idea that, like, if a fish measured its worth on how much, you know, at how well it could climb a tree, it would be miserable its whole life and miss out on all of the amazing wonder and incredibleness of being a fish and swimming in the ocean. And so I think we have to find our oceans.
Yeah. And, you know, another metaphor that I have used to explain to people kind of what it felt like to me before I was diagnosed and didn't have the tools and didn't have the verbiage and, you know, couldn't get a handle on anything, just constantly wondering what was wrong with me. It's as if you're given a car and the car randomly and without any kind of expectation accelerates and brakes. And sometimes the steering works and sometimes it doesn't. Yet you're told to get to a particular destination. That's what it feels like, because then, you know, the neurotypical counterparts are given cars that are predictable and they work. So it's easy, you know, yeah, you just get in the car and you just drive it. You know, you want to go to the store, you know how to get there, you get in the car, you drive. It's different when you've got ADHD because you never know. And I'm better able to understand now, like, what things produce dopamine, what things may help me. And listening to your podcast and some of the tips of, you know, like the dopamine sandwich and stuff like that kind of has really helped me a lot. But when you're completely in the dark, you're just like, why do I sometimes have drive? And why can I sometimes figure it out? And then other times I can't. And it's so frustrating. So yeah, the diagnosis is huge. Even if you can't get medication, it's still huge because you can, you know, the self-talk you need, you can get therapy, you can figure out some life strategies. It's just, it's a completely different. And honestly, I never before referred to my brain in the third person, but I do now. And I feel like that just by itself is helpful.
Yeah, actually, you're right. That's so true. I think that helps us detach ourselves from the emotional overwhelm of some of these situations where we can really say, like, look, that's not me. This is what my brain does. Because it's almost like talking to yourself, you know, when they say, like, talk to yourself like you would to a friend. And it's like, well, maybe this is our way of doing that by saying, like, it's okay. It's just your brain.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because I certainly could never talk to myself that way before. I was very harsh to myself. I would never speak to a friend the way that I spoke to myself ever. But yeah, now it's very much like, oh, I see that's how your brain works. My brain does this, you know, this is how my brain works. My brain disappeared there for a second. Can you explain that to me again? Run it past me one more time. You know, it's definitely helpful. It's useful in conversation. It's useful for self-talk in every way. So.
Oh, awesome. Well, thank you again, Melody. I know I keep going on and keeping you longer and longer. This has been really great. I really appreciated it. So.
Oh, I could talk all day. And I'm sure my family is glad for someone else distracting me for a little while. So.
Awesome.
All right. You have a good one. Thank you so much.
There you have it. Thank you for listening, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Women and ADHD podcast. If you'd like to find out more about me and my coaching programs, head over to womenandadhd.com. If you're a woman who was diagnosed with ADHD and you'd like to apply to be a guest on this podcast, visit womenandadhd.com/podcast guest, and you can find that link in the episode show notes. Also, you know we ADHDers crave feedback, and I would really appreciate hearing from you, the listener. Please take a moment to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Audible. And if that feels like too much, and I totally get it, please just take a few seconds right now to give me a 5-star rating. Or share this episode on your own social media to help reach more women who maybe have yet to discover and lean into this gift of neurodivergency. And they may be struggling and they don't even know why. I'll see you next week when I interview another amazing woman who discovered she's not lazy or crazy or broken, but she has ADHD. And she's now on the path to understanding her neurodivergent mind and finally using this gift to her advantage. Take care till then.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.